Hello. Welcome to Blacktor. Join me as I examine the best of black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blacktor. I'm your host, Gabe Moses. As we approach the last few weeks of summer, I want to take this moment to remind everyone that the fight is not over. We shall not forget what 2020 has brought us. Not only have there been many lives lost to a virus that is still out there, but this year has brought more attention to the lack of attention given to the injustice acts of racism that continue to take black innocent lives. I will encourage you to continue to educate yourselves, not only with this podcast, but with many other forms of black art. And most importantly, have conversations. Talk to close friends and family. Get to the root of what you think may not be the problem within your community, and help change this world to make all men and women truly equal. Now to the episode. Today's episode is dedicated to Toni Morrison, one of the most prolific American authors the world has ever seen. Throughout the episode, I'll be talking about how Morrison's works have contributed to the story of the black experience in America. So without further ado, let's get into it. Chloe Ardelia Wolford was born on February 18, 1931, in Lorain, Ohio. She was the second of four children. Her mother was a domestic worker and her father was a welder, and he also worked multiple jobs to support their family. Throughout her childhood, Morrison was exposed to reading and the arts at an early age. Storytelling was a very important part in the Wolford household. These experiences of sharing and hearing stories from her family would later influence Morrison's style of writing. When she was in high school, she began to read the works of authors like Jane Austen and Leo Tolstoy. Morrison was inspired by how these writers illustrated their own stories and experiences. She learned how important her voice could be, and how she had the power to talk about African-American culture through literature. She graduated from Lorain High School as an honor student in 1949. Later that year, Morrison attended Howard University in Washington, D.C. At Howard, she majored in English and minored in the classics. It was then when she changed her name to Toni, because, for some reason, the people at Howard couldn't pronounce her birth name, Chloe. Morrison was a member of the Howard University Players, a theater company that produced plays that highlighted famous historical African-American figures. She received her BA in English from Howard University in 1953. Next, Morrison would go on to receive her master's degree in English from Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, in 1955. She went on to teach at Texas Southern University for 2 years. She then returned to her alma mater, Howard University, to teach. While teaching English at Howard, she would meet her soon-to-be husband, Harold Morrison, an architect from Jamaica. The couple got married in 1958 and had 2 sons. Morrison would go on to join a writers' group on campus at Howard. There, she began writing her first novel. 6 years later, her husband moved back to Jamaica and the couple would get a divorce. Morrison moved to New York to work as an editor for the Random House Company. With much more time on her hands to work and care for her children, Morrison was able to continue writing her own pieces of work. As time went on, she became a senior editor and was the only African-American woman to work in her company. She was able to help publish the books of many black writers, including Gail Jones and June Jordan. She continued to teach on the side, while tightening up her novel, which was soon to be released. In 1970, Morrison released her first novel called The Bluest Eye. The story follows a young African-American girl, Picola Breedlove, who wishes that her eyes were blue and struggles to find where beauty lies within her. The book didn't sell well in the first couple of years. This was due to the protagonist of the book being a black girl. And at the time, black people, let alone black children, were still being mistreated and disregarded by the world. However, she did receive high praises for her style of writing and the beauty within her storytelling. Morrison continued to write despite the controversy surrounding her first novel. She hoped that one day her work would be appreciated and accepted by all of society. In 1974, Morrison's second novel, Sula, was published. The plot follows the complicated friendship of two black women growing up together in Ohio. The book was nominated for a National Book Award. Her third book, Song of Solomon, came out in 1977. This one follows the life of a man named Milkman. The protagonist learns to find himself through the magic of his black culture. Song of Solomon won a National Book Critics Circle Award in 1977 and an American Academy of Arts and Letters Award. It was also chosen as the second novel by an African American to be a Book of the Month selection. Here is a clip from an interview Morrison has with John Calloway in 1977.
Did you want to run away? Did you want to fly?
Oh, yes. I use different words for it because I think being a woman limited me in some regard. I thought only of certain kinds of art forms I wanted to be involved in, and they included dancing. I wanted really to be Maria Tallchief most of my life. But that's why the book is about men, because when I thought of that idea, I couldn't use women characters to explicate that idea.
Which you had done in your previous novels.
My previous books are all, the major characters are women, or young women, older women. And they are the ones, they are the center of the book. And it's sort of closed, like a room, like a house. But this book, because it was about both freedom and escape, and abandonment and triumph, had to be about men. And it was an enormous difference for me, huge differences. I'd never really tried to become that intimate with a character, a man, to try to feel what it was really like to think about dominion, power. Those kinds of things are alien to me in a way. Although I have done sketches of men, I've been a little fearful of going rather deeply inside.
When did you know that you were going to be a writer?
I never thought about it. I started to write when I was in a lonely place, and I was writing really for me and not for publication and not for anybody. It was a way of talking then. So I talked to myself a lot. And then later I wrote more and more, and I had a larger story that looked like a novel, and I sent it to some people, and they sent it back, and that happened a lot. And then finally there was an editor who had seen it, but was about to move, excuse me, to another publishing company. And he said, when I move, I'd like to see it again. And he went to Holt and he bought it. And by that time, I had begun to write, you see, and I didn't want to stop. I didn't want to think any other way. It was so terrific to be able to see the world that way. It was coherent. Things that were disorganized for me before made sense when I manipulated it. I saw colors and remembered music and language. All the things that I guess had made life interesting, I could employ. And it was just a way of thinking and a way of feeling. It was a way of life. I even know now, I certainly hope that I am a successful writer, but I know that if there were no publishing companies left in the world, I would still do it.
We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. Although she was well into her 50s, The 1980s would be a great decade for Morrison. She was appointed to the National Council of the Arts in 1980. In 1981, her next book would be published. Tar Baby was a novel about the love affair of two African Americans from different backgrounds. By this point, Morrison was becoming a household name and continued to write about her people and their experience. In 1983, Morrison began teaching English again at the State University of New York and Rutgers University. She became an Albert Schweitzer Chair at SUNY. In 1985, Morrison wrote her first play called Dreaming Emmett, and it was produced and performed in 86. The play examines the true story of Emmett Till, a black teenage boy who was beaten and murdered by white men in 1955. In 1987, her next novel would be her most notable work. The book is called Beloved and centers around Margaret Garner, a runaway slave who escaped with her children from Kentucky to Ohio. She was recaptured and attempted to kill her children instead of return them to slavery. I won't give anything else away. The book was widely acclaimed, so much so that in 1988, the novel won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction. Here is a clip of Morrison reading an excerpt from Beloved.
Setha was trying to make up for the handsaw. Beloved was making her pay for it. But there would never be an end to that. And seeing her mother diminished, shamed and infuriated her. Yet she knew Setha's greatest fear was the same one Denver had in the beginning, that Beloved might leave. That before Setha could make her understand what it meant, what it took to drag the teeth of that saw under the little chin, to feel the baby blood pump like oil in her hands, to hold her face so her head would stay on, to squeeze her so she could absorb still the death spasms that shot through that adored body, plump and sweet with life, Beloved might leave, leave before Setha could make her realize that worse than that, far worse, was what Baby Suggs died of, what Ella knew, what Stamp saw, and what made Paul D. tremble, that anybody white could take your whole self for anything that came to mind, not just work, kill, or maim you, but dirty you so bad you couldn't like yourself anymore, dirty you so bad you forgot who you were and couldn't think it up. And though she and the others lived through and got over it, she could never let it happen to her own. The best thing she was her children. Whites might dirty her all right, but not her best thing, her beautiful, magical best thing, the part of her that was clean.
After her huge success with Beloved, Morrison was finally being recognized for her gift as a writer and her ability to showcase black stories both from the past and present. Beloved became the first of three novels in the Beloved trilogy. Next was a novel titled Jazz, which was released in 1992. The book follows the neighborhood of 1920s Harlem and the influence of jazz music. The next year, before her trilogy was even complete, Morrison became the first African American to win a Nobel Prize in Literature. The third novel in this trilogy is called Paradise, which came out in 1998. Into the 21st century, Morrison was one of the world's most well-known authors. She began writing children's books and continued to publish novels, one of which is called Love, a book that came out in 2003. She retired from Princeton in 2006 after teaching there for over 15 years. In 2010, one of Morrison's sons passed away from pancreatic cancer. She was in the middle of writing another novel, but she stopped to mourn the death of her son. In 2012, the novel would be completed and published. The novel is called Home and centers around a Korean War veteran. That same year, Morrison received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama. Morrison would debut another play later in 2012 called Desdemona, based off of the character from Othello. Her 11th and final novel, called God Help the Child, came out in 2015. This novel explores the life of a black woman who lives with childhood trauma from when her mother would abuse her because of her dark skin. On August 5th, 2019, Toni Morrison passed away from complications of pneumonia at the age of 88. Her legacy will forever live on. She has touched so many black lives with her work as a writer, teacher, and an overall great human being. Over the years, several of her books were a part of Oprah Winfrey's book club. Beloved was turned into a film starring Winfrey and Danny Glover, and her writing has inspired many black artists to confidently use their voices. To end this episode, I'll be playing a clip from one of the many interviews Morrison has with Charlie Rose. This interview took place after the murder of Freddie Gray and during the Black Lives Matter protests in 2015. Enjoy.
Are these troubling times?
Yeah. These are. I think it's, yeah, I'm not sure they're all that different, but it's obvious now. It's very obvious that the times are troubled.
And repeated.
Mm-hmm. And a little cowardly,
yeah.
I think.
How do you think cowardly?
Well, when we think just about the media and the journalistic stories, television stories about young or middle-aged black men being shot by police, what astonishes me is not so many, because there's always been a lot, it's just never been newsworthy, is the obvious cowardice of the police. I don't mean all police, but those that we hear about. How are you afraid of a man running away from you? How are you afraid of somebody standing in a grocery store on a phone with a toy gun that you could buy in the store? How could you be afraid of a little boy? And who are these people who call 911? Who are they? You look out the window and you see a kid with a toy gun and you get on the phone. I like that policeman who was chasing a guy who had killed some people and turned around, faced the policeman and said, shoot me, shoot me. And the policeman wouldn't. He said, I'm not going to shoot you. I'm not going to shoot you. He kept saying it. The guy obviously wanted to be shot, suicide, by a cop, but he didn't do it. Then finally took the guy down. But then I realized that that policeman had been in the military. He was not a coward.
Had different training.
Entirely different. He was brave. He stood up. But these guys running around, you know, just popping people over and over again.
How can we change that?
We have to change the police training.
Yeah.
It can
be
done.
Yeah, that's the obvious.
Well, that's clear.
Yeah.
And, you know, perhaps, you know, I was wondering the same thing during the civil rights, you know, parades when Martin Luther King was around. What can we do? What can we do? Well, in that instance, you had somebody who could actually talk to somebody in the administration.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not so sure that that can happen now, in spite of the fact that the president of the United States is a black man.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can follow me on Instagram at Gabe J. Moses. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get updates on new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Until next time, I'm Gabe Moses, and Black Artists Matter.